It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor.
The problem is we don't know our neighbors anymore, Mr. Rogers. Few Americans today say they know their neighbors' names. Far fewer report interacting with them on a daily basis. What are we missing?
Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Would you be my neighbor?
Mark Dunkelman is our guest this hour. He's a fellow in public policy at Brown and senior fellow at the Clinton Foundation. He's the author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of the American Community. He's also done a great deal of writing for The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, Politico, and National Affairs. Lives in Providence, Rhode Island, where I hope he has some terrific neighbors, and they all get together regularly for, as my mom used to have, coffee clutches. Remember those? Coffee clutches. She had them all the time. They were great. So we're going to talk about what's happened and why we don't know our neighbors. What are we missing? We welcome your phone calls. Do you know your neighbors? Why don't we know our neighbors? Is it something about being plugged in to all our devices that we're spending time that way instead of talking in the front yard or on the front porch? We welcome your phone calls this hour and let's talk about our neighbors. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, Mark. Thanks very much for being with us.
Delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
How are your neighbors?
My neighbors are terrific. I actually moved to Providence, Rhode Island about 2 years ago, because I lived in a neighborhood of Washington, D.C., where I walked my dog around the same two blocks almost every day, and I knew almost nobody who lived nearby. I'd lived there for several years. Oh. So we moved here to Providence, and it's interesting, in a smaller city, and this may be true in parts of the upper Midwest as well, in a smaller city, it turns out that you frequently spend more of your time and attention on people who live nearby. Uh-huh. And you're less caught in the bubble that you can be if you're in a big metropolis like Washington or New York or L.A.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to have a dog if you want to be neighborly, too, because usually you'll meet other dog walkers and you talk about your dogs and then other things, right?
It's absolutely true. I mean, the experience I had in Washington was that even though we all had dogs and we all lived near one another, we were all very ensconced in our own social bubbles.
Right.
And so even if we nodded to one another across the street or someone looked familiar, we didn't get into the sort of conversation that I think was more of a staple of neighborhood life a generation or two ago.
Mm-hmm. Isn't this amazing? And I'm wondering what the statistics show about how it used to be and how it is now. This Pew Research Center study finding that 43% of Americans know most or all of their neighbors, but nearly a third said they know them, they don't know their names, which means they don't know them very well. I remember growing up, and I don't think it's just, you know, a rosy memory of childhood, but our neighbors were over at the house all the time. We all knew them. We knew their kids. When they moved, we kept in touch with them. I still keep in touch with some of those people.
Well, you're absolutely right, and there are parts of American life and places where people still do know their neighbors. That is experiences differs from person to person and neighborhood to neighborhood. But on the whole, what's happened over the last couple of decades, if not more, is that we're investing much more of our time and attention in the handful of people that we know best and that we love,
mm-hmm.
the people that we text with. We think frequently of texting as a technology that allows us to reach out to a wider swath of the world, but in fact, when you text, you tend to text with just a handful of people. You ask dad for a ride home, or you ask mom for help with something, or your best friend. You rarely text with someone you don't know that well. And so we're spending much more time with the people that we love most. And alternatively, it's much easier for us to connect with people who share some certain common interests. So I am one of about 36 Cincinnati Bengals fans in the world. we all know each other now because we're able to connect, even though I live in Rhode Island and a few of us live in more scattered parts of the country, in the world. a generation or two ago, I couldn't have been in touch with those folks. And so now the pattern today is that if you have a specific interest in something, a certain comic book hero or a certain style of knitting or whatever it is, you can connect with those people no matter where they live and develop what is really a pretty ephemeral connection.
Yes.
You can talk with them over about only that subject and not know what their politics are or what their faith is or what they're really like or whether their parents are having trouble or whether their kids are struggling in school. You wouldn't know any of those things. So what's happened is we're investing in different sorts of relationships than Americans of previous generations did, and that's got all sorts of ripple effects that we can go into.
And do those Cincinnati Bengals fans that you're in touch with get together? Do you all see each other face-to-face or not?
Oh, no. We just complain about Andy Dalton over and over and over again.
I don't even know who that is.
But... Well, he's the quarterback. He's got a big upside, we hope.
I definitely wouldn't be a member of your group, I'm afraid. You have said there used to be this necessity to reach out and build bonds with people who live nearby. When was it a necessity and why?
Well, it's been a necessity throughout most of American history. In fact, it's sort of the distinguishing feature, I think really the root of the exceptional nature of American life is that in the United States we built what sort of looked like a little house on the prairie sort of social structure, where people with different interests and different concerns and different points of view had to come together. This is something that Alexis de Tocqueville noted in the 1830s, and that really lasted, that sort of core building block of diversity within a certain social atmosphere existed from colonial villages to frontier towns to urban tenements to first-ring suburbs. So that lasts really from the late 1700s, if not earlier, to the middle of the 20th century. And that sort of core way of interacting with people who lived nearby existed and was maintained even as there are all sorts of changes in the way the economy worked, the way society worked generally. The shift happened, I think, after the Second World War, and increasingly for a whole variety of reasons, technological reasons. We had different predilections about what we wanted from our relationships, whether we wanted to be closer to people who shared our points of view or people who had a more diverse points of view. And so the shift has really happened over the course of the last few decades, really without us putting our finger on it, articulating it particularly well.
Mm-hmm. And plus, we've done all these strange things like build gated communities to keep people who we don't want in away. We build a lot of fences. We don't have front porch swings very much anymore. We're really making attempts to keep people out, it seems to me.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. I also think, however, that if you think about your day and if at the end of the day you come home, drive your car into the garage, get out, move inside, cook dinner for your kids, help them with their homework, and then get online after they're in bed, there's no point in that routine where you are compelled to move outside into the neighborhood to talk to the people who live next door, to go to a PTA meeting, that our routines are that even if we live nearby people who generally agree with us, and that's certainly true, we are moving into much more homogenous neighborhoods, and but I think that's a slightly different phenomenon, that the question is, who is it that each of us individually spends our time and attention talking to?
Mm-hmm.
Who are we interacting with? Because I think that our parents and grandparents probably interacted with people who lived nearby, people with whom they had familiar but not intimate relationships, much more frequently than we do, simply because we have the opportunity to spend much more time with the people we love. If we're traveling, we can Skype with them rather than going to the hotel bar. If we're if our best friend moves away, we can talk to them all the time. I'm in touch with my wife all the time during the day when we're at work in ways that my grandparents probably were not in touch. And the fact that we are in touch with people that we love so much and that people that share some common affinity so much more frequently leaves less time for us to be in touch with people who are only moderately familiar to us.
Yeah. I'm in the process, as several people on our staff are, of moving, and I've been in the same neighborhood for a long time, 26 years. And in the process of looking at homes, I must tell you, Mark, that who the neighbors were was very important to me. I went out of my way, and maybe even was a little bit obnoxious, but walking through a yard and saying, hi, I'm thinking of moving in here. I wanted to find out a little bit about the neighborhood. And I would really judge the quality, not just the house, but all the people walking dogs and how friendly people were, and trying to find out how long they'd been there and what their lives were like and what the neighborhood was like. It's really way up there for me, and community is a sense of community.
And I think that's true for lots and lots of people. I also think, however, that there are other people that move in and they want to be near a Whole Foods, or they want to be near a Cracker Barrel. And there are different sorts of markers that you see in your neighborhood or in any given neighborhood that send to you clues that suggest this is where my niche lives. You know, there are going to be people who vote like I do, people who root for the same teams, people who go to the same sorts of houses of faith. We're going to find people who are like us, and that's a really crucial factor. And for other people like you, and actually like me, I moved into a neighborhood specifically because it had a reputation for being warm, that there's a block party that's been going on in that neighborhood for 50 years. But if I moved two or three blocks away, I suspect I wouldn't nearly have that sort of fabric in life. And I agree with you. I think it's just it's a real plus.
Yeah, well, how's the ice cream shop near where you live? I know that was important earlier in your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We got a place called Three Sisters here at the top of Blackstone Boulevard, and it is delicious.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, what about this idea of whether or not this looking for people who are sort of like us, maybe even politically, which you can tell is what's happening when you look at political breakdowns of where people are voting, is it not a good thing? Does it lessen our tolerance to be living with people who think the way we do?
Well, I think there are advantages and disadvantages to it. And I think obviously the advantage is you want to be welcomed in the community where you live. And if people are if people are on the other side of the marriage equality debate, and then you're on the and on one side and everyone else on the other, it can feel unwelcoming, and you may not want to live there. I think that the disadvantage of having more homogenous neighborhoods is that it's through those conversations that you have with people that you know in a familiar way, but not an intimate way, that you begin to appreciate the other point of view. So that if you're a liberal college professor and there's an independent businesswoman who runs the coffee shop down the street, and you have just a casual conversation about something that's happening in the city council or a vote that's going to come up in the state legislature, and you have sort of a conversation where you have different points of view, but you begin to understand the other person's background or why they think what they do. It may not be that you yourself comes around to the other position. But it may be that when the political actors at the state house or in the city council begin to find some sort of common ground, they begin to compromise with the other side, you're not outraged by it. You begin to think to yourself, well, I don't really think that the compromise is the best thing, but I can understand why they're doing that. I understand the other point of view. I'm more open to the idea of accommodating people who have a different point of view. And in the absence of that, if all of your time is spent talking to people who agree with you implicitly because they live with you, or they're your best friend and you sort of come from the same place, or you're alternatively talking to people who you only know because they root for the same football team or share your love of bike lanes or have the same political point of view, in the absence of those sort of what I call middle room relationships, meaning that they are sort of moderately familiar relationships that happen in the neighborhood, it's much less likely that you're going to be willing to accommodate a compromise in politics.
Mm. The only thing I don't want to compromise on is dogs, and I do look for neighborhoods that have a lot of people walking their dogs.
From your mouth to God's ears.
You're my kind of guy. We should be neighbors. Let's welcome phone calls. We have many of them. Our number is 800-486-8655. Mark Dunkelman is our guest. We're talking about why we don't know our neighbors anymore. We don't know their names. We may wave at them, but we just don't interact with them on a daily basis. Is this not a good thing, or does it make sense with all of the devices that we have? We can be in touch with those who are really very near and dear to us. We love dearly, and so we spend time with them, and that's all right. Mark Dunkelman is a fellow in public policy at Brown, senior fellow at the Clinton Foundation, and author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. Our number is, our lines are filled, but keep it in your mind, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page. I think we should have some interesting comments on Facebook. Think of it as your online neighborhood today, and let's hear what you have to say about this issue. Did I tell you how to get there? It's the Kathleen Dunn Show, where you should also look at the therapy dogs that were posted a couple days ago because they're just wonderful. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls for our guest, and Beth is first in Washburn. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
It cut out, so I wasn't sure if it was me or not. I'm 65 years old, and I've lived all around the country in different kinds of communities. And my observation is, watching my kids grow up, is nobody's ever home until after dark. And, you know, they come in, make dinner, if they have kids or not have kids. If they don't have kids, they work longer. If they have kids, they try to make it home, and then they're out the door to go do other activities. So you might make friends through all of those, but not necessarily your neighbors. So it typically, in my experience, has been that your friends become your workmates and not the people who live next door to you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Are your neighbors friends? Beth, do you knock on doors? Do you interact with your neighbors?
When there was a short period of time when I didn't work, and I was known for knocking on doors and inviting myself in for coffee. and we did have a nice community then. But if somebody doesn't do that, typically people don't come out.
Right.
They just don't come out of their house.
Yeah.
And my neighbors certainly wouldn't have come out of their house. They didn't come out of their house until I went on both sides and knocked on doors, and the three of us became lifelong friends.
Sometimes you have to knock on the doors, right, Mark?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a terrific point, and she's absolutely right that people are busier, that there are fewer hours spent at home, though it varies from person to person. Sort of an interesting sort of addendum to that thoughtful point is that if you have a political issue or something that's really important to you, if you're a big fan of bike lanes, for example, and you want to have the city council install more in your neighborhood, it used to be that you would go to maybe the Rotary Club and do a presentation, or you go to the PTA and you'd see whether people were interested in that. You'd begin going door to door to get people to sign a petition. Today you can do it all online, and there are enormous advantages to that, right? You don't have to pay for coffee. You don't have to invest the sweat equity of going door to door or talking to people in lengthy conversations about the benefits of bike lanes. Today you can just do a change.org petition or put together a website or reach out to people through social media. And that makes it much easier for all the people who are interested in bike lanes to work together collectively. But you lose the sort of personal interaction that you once had when people were forced to have interactions face to face.
I want to talk about the coffee klatch for a moment. I was thinking about my mom having these coffee klatches. She worked part-time, sometimes full-time, but usually part-time. And maybe it was an issue of time as well and the changing role of women in the workplace, because now everybody's working. But I remember those fondly, and heavens knows they were a big part of her life. People would get together, the neighbors, mostly women, at least twice a week, and have their coffee klatches and, you know, have donuts and a cup of coffee and thoroughly enjoyed each other's company.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That was a norm of American society for decades and decades, that there were those sorts of interactions between people who lived nearby, who had some common interests but not necessarily entirely common interests, and that they exchanged points of view and people enjoyed that. And now I think people have the opportunity to spend much more of their time with people that they love most. They'd rather spend an extra hour, as the previous caller said, that there are fewer and fewer hours when we're not at work. So the hours that we have for leisure or at home, we want to spend with the people that we love most, our spouses, our children, our parents, our best friends.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to spend less time with that. That leaves less room for coffee clatches and Rotary Club meetings and whatnot.
Yeah.
And secondly, when we have limited amounts of time, we want to spend time talking about the things that are most interesting to us, our favorite baseball player, our most treasured hobby, the travel that we want to do once we retire. Those are all on our minds, and they're competing for our time and attention.
Yeah, but you might be missing out on meeting your best friend, as Beth did, who was her neighbor.
That's absolutely right. There are costs and benefits, and I think we are not appreciating the degree to which the cost of investing less time in what I call the middle rings mm-hmm. is having across American society as a whole.
And tell us more. You make this Saturn comparison, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, so the core thesis is that if you organize all the people that you know in a pattern that looks like the rings of Saturn, and you're the planet, and the people who are most intimately connected to you, your spouse, your children, your best friends, your parents, are in the innermost rings. And then as you move further out to the rings that are further from the planet, you get less and less intimacy, to the point where maybe in the outermost ring you would place the barista who you ordered a latte from 3 days ago
mm-hmm.
and that you'll never see again. So the question is, you as an individual have some agency in deciding where you're going to invest your time and attention. So you could invest it all in the innermost rings. You could invest it all in people who only have a single common interest. So those are the outermost rings. You could invest it in the middle rings, which are the people who are familiar but not intimate, the people that are at the PTA meeting or at the block party or in a bowling league. And my argument in my book is that for the bulk of American history, we invested a lot in the middle rings. We did that in the colonial period, in the frontier, in the period where urban tenements were pervasive, in the first ring suburbs before and after the Second World War. But that over the course of the last few decades, we've taken our time and attention and invested it much more heavily in the innermost rings and the outermost rings. And that it's those middle rings that have begun to lose the sort of the social capital, the investment that we used to make.
Beth, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to John next. Hi, John.
Yeah, there's lots of reasons why there's such an impersonality today, and it's hard to cope with for most people. Television came in about 1950. It took everybody inside the house. And that was a big change. Less people out on the sidewalk anymore talking. The other thing is there's a lot of xenophobia out here that nobody wants to talk about. The hatred, the scorn, disdain of other people. And people don't want to get close. They're afraid. They want to avoid trouble if they can. There's a fear of exogamy, which is a big racial issue now. And yet the media will not touch it with a 10-foot pole. The country is grossly overpopulated. We don't need any more people. What we need is some people, and we're not getting them. And there's problems all over the place. Trust is at an all-time low. People are depressed to no end. And they don't see no faith in the future. They don't see things getting better. All this gadgetry and gimmickry out here, that's just a temporary thing for the capitalist hogs to try and make money off of.
All right, let's hold it there because I think that could probably go on for a while. Mark, John is not a very happy guy, I don't think.
Well, I hope his neighbors check in on him. He made several legitimate points. One of them is that he's absolutely right. The technology plays a big role here, right? That televisions brought people inside. That cell phones make it so it's much easier to be in touch with people when they're traveling. That Skype and FaceTime have made it so that when you're on the road, it's much more tempting to read your kid a bedtime story from your hotel room than it is to go down to the hotel bar and talk to somebody that you might not otherwise ever have interacted with. Mm-hmm. So there are sort of all sorts of reasons. You mentioned earlier the fact that women have entered the professional workforce in massive numbers over the course of the last several decades. That certainly played a role. There are all sorts of issues here. And the question is the confluence of different changes. What impact has that had on the decisions that you and I and all sorts of other people make when we're choosing to invest our time and attention.
Yeah. Greg writes this on Facebook, a nice comment. In Minneapolis, all of our neighbors know each other on 3200 Cleveland Street, and we have our own Facebook page. We've started to invite neighbors from other blocks and have an email chain to let everybody know what's going on in the city and the neighborhood. We have chili dessert cook-offs, and from early spring until late fall, someone is having a happy hour every Friday or Saturday. I love how connected we are, and we also watch out for each other.
Well, I don't know what didn't you say a chili dessert cook-off?
A chili, dessert cook-offs.
Fair enough. All right. that's a totally different kettle of fish.
Right.
The truth is that what he's identified is that there are people, and there are many of us, who are desperate for these sorts of relationships. That
it really
builds sort of a fabric to your life. And it's absolutely true that I think in many cases people are, if they can, trying to move to neighborhoods that have thick middle-ring connections. I think it's a real selling point. It's one of the reasons that my wife and I decided to move from D.C. to Providence. We really believed that in a smaller city in New England, we would have the sorts of ties to our neighbors. And I think that's been borne out. It may be the street that we live in. It may be the part of the city. But I think it varies from place to place. The other interesting thing is that there are technologists today who are noticing this. So there's a new social network that's being built up, and it's in thousands of communities around the country called Nextdoor.
I know. I tried to get on that last night, and I just didn't have time to sign in and everything. But that sounds neat. That's a good idea.
Right. It's a social. It's trying to fill that gap for people so that you may have just moved into a neighborhood and you don't know anybody, but you can get onto a social network and begin to meet people who have common interests, but maybe don't, and simply live nearby. You get a flavor of the neighborhood in a way that you wouldn't if you just moved in and never spoke to the people who nearby. So. This is there's sort of a latent interest in rebuilding these middle ring relationships in lots of communities, and we'll see. I tried in the book not to make any prediction. We'll see whether that interest trumps our desire to spend more and more time with, you know, this coterie of people that we love dearly or that have a shared common interest.
Yeah, Jennifer in Washington County. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, I live in the Holy Hill area, the southwest corner.
Uh huh.
And I've just kicked my kids out of the house a little while ago, and I can't see them, I can't hear them, and I've got to go see if they're overstaying their welcome at the neighbors. Actually, I think I hear no. But conversely, my parents moved to Florida about 15 years ago to a gated community with at least 100 homes, and they know two of their neighbors. They all have to come in the same gate, and they don't even know. Oh, there's one right now.
Oh. Hi, child.
And yeah, okay. And then one last thing is you're just talking about those neighborhood sites. A friend of mine also in Florida just found her lost dog on one of those sites.
Oh.
It was really good. An old deaf dog.
Are your parents lamenting the fact that they don't know anybody?
I don't know. I think there may be a mental illness component. Oh, here's a child. Oh, what child?
How many are coming in, Jennifer? How many?
Well, I only see one, but they tend to come in clumps.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes, go ahead. I think there's a sprinkler involved now.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry for this live update here. But so that's my story.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer. Mark.
Well, it's a fascinating point because frequently when we talk about how communities change, we talk about gated neighborhoods and we sort of talk about keeping other people out of our immediate environment. The presumption is that the people within the gate are all talking to one another. But that's actually not the case, right? In many cases, the real barrier is between the home and the people that are nearby. So whether you live in a gated community or in a community that's wildly diverse, the question is whether after you get home from work each day, do you spend time? Do you invest in the institutions and the people that are around you? Do you go to a PTA meeting? Do you go to a local community meeting? Do you bowl in a league rather than just bowling with your best friend and your children? The crucial distinction isn't whether the neighborhoods themselves are homogenous. It's not whether everyone's a Democrat or everyone's a Republican. The question is whether even if everyone is the same in their political point of view, or they're all rooting for the Packers or they're all rooting for the Bears or whatever it is, are they actually interacting in a substantive way over the course of the hours that they have to spend away from work?
Yeah. Well, they're sure not rooting for the Bengals. Sorry.
It's a small elite crew of us that root for the Bengals.
I guess you're right. Yeah. Ray in Milwaukee says he thinks that it may be connected with the quality of jobs today. We no longer see many factory towns. Also, he just doesn't see a lot of children on the street playing anymore. And children, he says, are the glue that brings parents together.
Well, both are very astute points. On the issue of factory towns, what's interesting is that the economy has changed. As we move to a globalized, digitized, social service sort of economy, you don't have the sorts of hierarchies that used to exist in industrial America, in the sense that you used to have a factory, you'd have the executive suite folks, you'd have the sales folks and the legal folks and the accounting folks, you'd have the people on the factory floor, and on some level, in the course of their daily routines, they were going to interact with one another. They couldn't avoid one another. Today, in a service-oriented economy, you've got everybody who's in a call center all together. You've got people who are lawyers all together. You've got people and people who are doing various tasks. They're all very specialized, and they're interacting with people who have the same experience. So that the normal routine is not to have a middle ring connections to people who have different experiences and different points of view. It's a profound shift, and one of the multiple shifts that I note in my book that have forced us or sort of compelled us to spend our social time and attention in different sorts of relationships.
Yeah. Kathy sends an email. She remembers hearing a WPR program about the invention of air conditioning and how it sent everybody inside and so less sitting out on porches.
Another crucial factor, absolutely.
Air conditioning changed a lot of things in this country, didn't it? You could live in Florida.
I think that's right. There, a lot of folks blame the growth of the federal bureaucracy in the 50s and 60s on the fact that, whereas Washington is just miserable to be in the summer, that people could stay in the summer, get year-round federal jobs, and be in much greater comfort than they could in earlier decades.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsay sends an email. Do you think that in some ways evening book clubs and girls' night out has replaced the weekday coffee clutches that our moms used to have?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's not that people don't have their evening hours. It's the question is, what sorts of interactions are you having? Are you spending time with your neighbors? Are you spending time at the PTA meeting? Are you going to bowl with people who from various different industries, or are you finding your six best friends who all live at various points in the city or around the neighborhood? Are you just the six of you coming together and having a glass of wine and talking about a terrific book? It's a different sort of relationship, the benefits of having neighborly relationships is that you're getting different points of view, and you're able to see the world through a different pair of eyes. Mm-hmm. If you are investing more heavily in these inner and outer ring relationships, there are enormous benefits to that. If you are a lonely you're a lonely kid and you're really into comic books and there's nobody in your neighborhood who's interested in comic books, you can find a community of people, of like-minded people, who can sort of give you some affirmation. That's a real blessing. But the downside is that this experience that used to be the norm, that you couldn't avoid, of having interactions with people who had different points of view, we've lost that.
We are talking about our neighbors this hour of the program with Mark Dunkelman. He's a fellow in public policy at Brown, senior fellow at the Clinton Foundation, and the author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. Only about 20% of Americans really spend time regularly with the people who are living next to them. A third say they have never, that's incredible to me, never interacted with their neighbors. A significant decline from 40 years ago, when a lot of Americans spent time with their neighbors, significant amount of time, at least twice a week, and only a quarter reported no interaction at all. All right. What do you think? Do you interact with your neighbors? Do you think that we're losing something that really enhances our lives by not knowing who our neighbors are? Or has society changed so much that we're all working hard, and when we get home and after we have dinner, we choose to spend time with those who are closest to us, and we just have to forgo neighborliness? Or is that something that we need to really examine and say, wait a second, do we want to live this way? Well, our lines are open for you. So if you want to be neighborly and give us a call, here's how you do so. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. I think it's one of the things about doing talk shows where you have callers is that it is kind of a neighborhood. We have this neighborhood. It's a radio neighborhood, which makes it kind of weird in a way, although radio is very intimate, and I feel like the people who call, I feel like I know many of you because I've talked to you for years, so it's like you're my neighbors. And I like that. It's a good thing about what we do every day. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mark Junkelman, author of The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community, is our guest, and we're welcoming phone calls from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. John in River Falls, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Right, I'm all right, John. How are you?
Well, I'm just terrific so
good.
Far.
Good. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to weigh in on that neighbor issue thing.
Sure.
Over here, you know, it just seems like neighbors are not neighbors like they were 30, 40 years ago. It seems like people move in and they just do whatever they want to do and have no consideration for their neighbors whatsoever. The biggest thing is, dogs, for one, everybody lets their dogs run, and they don't care if they run into their neighbor's yard to do their business or not.
Yeah, well, that's not good.
Well, not really. And, you know, the other thing is everybody thinks that they can just move somewhere, not interact with their neighbors, and then, you know, kind of just be rude to them and think it's their neighbor's fault and not their own. You know, the point is that people are not neighborly anymore. They don't come to help you if you needed help, and you couldn't really rely on them if you really had to. And it's getting to be a pretty sad situation.
Well, that's not true in all neighborhoods, though, John. That's not true in my neighborhood.
Well, I think it depends on where you live, for one.
Yeah.
And then exactly who your neighbors are.
Right.
I mean, where we live out here in the farming communities, there never used to be houses for 2.5 miles. Now we got 60 houses in those 2 miles to this day.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know any of the neighbors whatsoever, and they don't take the time to come and know us either, even though we've lived there for the past 50 years.
Mm. Do you live on a farm, John?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I've always wondered about people who live on farms. How do you interact with neighbors? Your neighbors aren't very close to you, are they?
Well, they are now. They're right on the borders.
Oh,
right on
I
the
see.
Boundaries.
Right.
You know, except for the land that we haven't sold, or of what developers have brought in,
mm-hmm.
and then planted a lot of houses.
I see.
These people are there only for themselves, and they don't care who lives next to them.
Yeah. Do you grow food, John?
We cash crop and raise beef.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe if you had a little food party, I bet you neighbors would come. People come for free food.
And that's about all they come for.
Oh.
After that, you never see them again.
Oh, maybe not. It's worth a try, don't you think, Mark?
Well, John brings up a terrific point, which is that the definition of the word neighborly has changed over the course of the last few decades.
Hmm.
It used to be that to be neighborly meant greeting the person that moved in with a plate of cupcakes or saying hello in the morning. Today, neighborly means something different. Often it means giving people their privacy. It means that if you're in an apartment building and you hear an argument through the wall, that the next day when you see those folks in the lobby of your building, you don't mention it. And that's a pretty distinct difference. It sort of gets right to the core of the issue, which is that the sense that you want to be connected to people who live nearby has been diminished by our desire to sort of have autonomy in our own homes.
Yeah. You remember the welcome wagons? You're probably not old enough for that. Remember, they used to deliver, you move into a place and the welcome wagon people would come and they'd give you little coupons or give you tastes of, the bakery that might be in the area. It was always such a welcome sight.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, when we moved into our neighborhood in Providence, Rhode Island a couple of years ago, four or five folks on the street came over and brought something, whether it was salt and bread or some cupcakes or a cake. And it was the moment that we knew we were home.
Oh, isn't that nice? Isn't that a good thing?
Yeah. Terrific.
It is a terrific thing. John, thank you very much for your call. Bob in Kenosha. Hi.
Well, I'll start off with, in my youth, I'm in my late 50s, my mother always told me, great fences make great neighbors. So that was kind of a mantra that I carried with me through life. And recently sat down with my daughter, who's in her late teens, early 20s now, and she asked me about what the world was like before the internet, and we drew a poster. It was kind of a yin yang, and it's on our refrigerator. It's pre-internet, post-internet, and it's kind of like good guy, bad guy poster, and the evil side post-internet, and the joyful side is pre-internet. And I don't know. We analyzed the world to be a little bit more evil post-internet. In our world.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about that? Do we see danger all around us? Do we fear our neighbors? Fear other people more, Mark?
Well, it's a terrific observation. I think the best indicator of that is the fate of hitchhiking. It used to be that it was a norm in society to stick out your finger and take a ride from a stranger. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the last few decades, hitchhiking has fallen off dramatically, and there are a whole variety of reasons for that. There are more cars. Cars are cheaper to maintain. There have been some scary movies with hitchhikers gone wrong. And there are a whole variety of norms. But one of the reasons I think that people are more wary of getting into a stranger's car is that they've had fewer and fewer interactions with strangers. They are much more invested in these relationships with people that they know intimately. They're much more invested in totally ephemeral relationships, people who they know only by their internet handle or on Twitter or on a blog. And they have fewer and fewer interactions with people who will come from across the tracks or down the street or come from a completely different milieu. And the effect is that there is, as a previous caller mentioned, there's less trust across the board. There's certainly less trust in government. There's less trust in houses of faith. There's less trust in organizations. There's less trust in schools and in banks and in businesses. So trust has fallen off, I think, largely because we have fewer and fewer moments where we are seeing the world through another person's eyes and realizing that there's a certain common humanity, that we're all having many of the same experiences. People who are other now are much more alien.
Mm-hmm. And yet there are all these dating sites where people are getting together after learning a little bit on the internet, and they're not fearful about going out on a date with somebody, right?
I suppose that's a countervailing trend. Absolutely, there are ways now. It used to be that you would meet somebody in a bar, you'd have some familiarity with them, and you'd have a mutual friend in common. And because we have fewer of those middle ring connections, people are relying much more frequently on internet dating sites where people are an arm's length apart, and the only way they can meet people is through these sort of these outer ring relationships.
Right.
And there are advantages. I mean, I do sort of want to, I think there we've lost a lot. I do want to point out we've gained a lot too. You know, when my mother growing up in Cincinnati needed a new outfit, she and her mother, my grandmother, would take the streetcar down to Fountain Square in Cincinnati and go to sort of the central commercial district of Cincinnati, Ohio. And there were just a few department stores, and they would walk through departments of clothing that was geared for other demographics, and they'd find the rack that was right for my mother or fit my grandmother's taste, and they would interact with all sorts of people who weren't from their background, and that was a benefit by one standard, which was that you began to see how other people lived. But by another, it meant that my mother could only select from that small rack of clothing. And now she can go to stores, or my daughters can go to stores that are explicitly for their demographic, that cater exactly to their taste. They can do it online, so that the options for what they buy is much wider, and the ability to see what other people from who share their sensibilities are wearing is much wider. Like that's an enormous opportunity. The loss is that you are less frequently having interactions. You're less less frequently in close proximity and talking to people who are from other places.
Thanks, Bob, for your call. Let's go to Karen in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say a word about neighborhood associations. Oshkosh is working on these really hard right now. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we have 7 neighborhood associations. I was in Green Bay a couple weeks ago where there are 40-some neighborhood associations. And it's the one of the purposes of this is to try to get some of this neighborliness back to the community, because it makes a huge difference in terms of quality of life. And that sort of thing. Premise is based on a structure that NeighborWorks, a national organization, but an organization that's, I think, relatively new in Wisconsin, NeighborWorks helps people accomplish. And it's been a very interesting process here in Oshkosh. I belong to the Menominee South Neighborhood Association. It's not particularly homogeneous. Actually, we have a very heterogeneous neighborhood, given how large we are. But we get together every now and then, and I've met a number of really interesting people, and we started a couple of really interesting things, like a book club, a neighborhood book club.
Very nice. Mark, is this rare, or are we seeing more of attempts to recreate something we may have had before?
Well, there are folks out there who are desperate for this, and I'm one of them. People want to be connected to people who live nearby. They want to have that experience, particularly a heterogeneous neighborhood association. It's probably more and more of a rarity, but it is exactly the sort of interaction many of us want to have. We want to know how other people have lived their lives, what they think, how they perceive what's going on in the world, and a neighborhood association like that provides that opportunity.
Yeah.
The reality is that there are fewer and fewer of those sorts of interactions, if only because that many of those people would go home and find a blog or a Facebook page or a television station that catered exactly to their pre-existing point of view, so that rather than have the sort of the pressure or it sometimes can be uncomfortable to talk to people who have different points of view at a neighborhood association, it's much easier to stay home and be sort of spoon-fed exactly what you already think.
Right.
And so that's the pull and the push, is that there's an ease and a convenience and a satisfaction and even an affirmation in spending your time in the inner and the outer rings. That's why, in many cases, people are choosing to invest their time and attention there. But there's something lost when you don't have those interactions that sounds like your caller had in their neighborhood association.
Thanks, Karen. Mary in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I just want to say that I had surgery, and my neighbors have been so wonderful. They've mowed my lawn. They did my hedging. They, that kind of thing. They took out my recyclables. They've taken out my garbage. They've made meals for me. They've gone grocery shopping for me. They have just been amazing, and I just want to salute them all. So if I can just say Bill and Michelle and Griffin and Sophie and Robin and David and and Kent and Carol. And,
oh, my goodness.
And it's just wonderful. They're just wonderful. Johanna, it's just amazing. They're just great. And they also moved my car because I had alternate side of the street parking. So when I was in the rehab center, they moved my car so I wouldn't get a ticket. They're just wonderful. And I live in Madison.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks for the call. Oh, that's a call that makes you want to develop friendships with your neighbors. They're really looking out for her. And there are so many of them.
Makes you want to move to Madison.
It does. They Thanks, Mary, very much for the call. One more call. We're getting short on time. Ken is next in Mayville. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I just have to say my parents, some of their best friends still today, are people that I had just met cruising the neighborhood where I grew up. I'm in my mid-40s, and, you know, chatting with people, and they've become some of my parents' best friends still to this day. And I love the fact kids really do help, and I'm grateful my girls go out and meet other people and other kids in the neighborhood and become a lot of good friends in our neighborhood, too.
Very nice. Well, there's a strong stream of neighborliness running through this hour, Mark, I would say.
I think that's right. Sounds like Wisconsin, and the listenership you have is more neighborly than maybe a few other communities around the world and around the country.
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do: create neighborliness, among other things. Mark, thank you very much for being with us. It was such an interesting hour, something we don't normally talk about, and it's worthwhile. It's very worthwhile. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Our guest, Mark Dunkelman. His book is The Vanishing Neighbor, The Transformation of American Community. He's a research fellow at Brown University's Taubman Center for Public Policy and American Institutions and a senior fellow at the Clinton Foundation. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing the show and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Be with you again on Monday for All Things Political, and that's at 1 o'clock every Monday. We talk about what's happening in the world of politics, and it's a lot. So that's when we will next be together. Thanks for listening, neighbors.